Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Stop It's Time, brought to you by Aaron's. Easy, beautiful, affordable. Top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best. That's fine. Get started at Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. Mike Conti, Jason Longshore, Jimmy Vance. Match week for Atlanta United. Feels like it's been forever since they've played a match.
It really hasn't.
No, like, I know.
It feels like it's been forever.
Well, you know what it is? They've played so many matches. Yeah. Like, they've had so many Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Friday type deals that when you go a week and a half without a match, it feels like they haven't played forever. That will change Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, mm-hmm. Wednesday, Sunday. Sunday in Montreal, and then they'll have a week off before decision day. We'll talk about Atlanta United. We'll take your questions as well. Type them in at the bottom of your screen. Should we start with the twice-capped Miles Robinson,
yes.
though? And Brad Guzan getting another cap as well for the U.S. men's national team last night. Pretty good, I thought. 1-1 draw against Uruguay. Didn't get to see much of it, but that's a good result after a not very good performance Friday night at Giant Stadium. And now Miles and Brad will come back to Atlanta if they aren't here already. Regardless of how you feel about how the team played, and I could go on a rant about how it's just a little too much Columbus for my liking right now.
You're not going to yell about possession, are you?
No, I don't care about possession. I care about the guys who are holding possession. Like, I don't see it with Will Trapp. I just don't. I just do not. Greg Berhalter obviously does. I don't. I don't see it with Jazzy's artist, but I understand that Jozy Altidore is not with the team right now. There's a reason for that. All that being said, Miles Robinson getting a week and a half with the men's national team, getting to play a little bit against Mexico, getting to play against Uruguay, this is a good thing. This is going to help him in his development as he continues to kind of ramp up. And quite frankly, neutral observers were saying that Miles Robinson was better than Aaron Long in this cycle. Miles Robinson was better than Walker Zimmerman in this cycle.
Yep.
That's up to your opinion, but it's good to at least hear that.
Miles Robinson should start two games in the next CONCACAF Nations League matches, where it's Canada and Cuba. He should start both of those. Should be him and John Brooks. I think that's the pairing that I'd like to see. I'm over the whole thing about Miles isn't good enough with the ball at his feet. He plays in a possession system here. He can play in Greg Berhalter's possession system. And he was better than Aaron Long in this. And I would have had Long and Brooks as my preferred pairing up until this. The other reason why I'd have it is when you look at the way the U.S. is playing right now, transition is poor. That's been my biggest issue from last night. The Mexico game is a whole different story. But last night, every time you turned the ball over, you didn't win it back quickly, and you got sliced up. And I thought Bobby Warshaw had a great point at MLSsoccer.com where he talked about they need to foul. They need to learn how to foul in the middle third. That's something that we've seen with Atlanta United. You see 100%. It with top teams. Yeah. You lose possession. You don't win it back. You got to commit a foul. That's the game. You take a yellow, you take a yellow. That's the game. They don't do that. So last night they tried 10 tackles in the whole match. They committed 3 fouls in the whole match. They had 59% of the possession. They only had 11 shots. Uruguay had 41% of the possession and 15 shots because you're not breaking up the play when it turns over. The reason you want Miles in there, he can clean it up. If you're not going to break up the play, if you're going to allow it to play, he's the guy with the closing speed. He's the one who can bail you out because we've seen it here many times.
You're not going to make a change. You're not sacking Greg Berhalter.
Oh, no, that shouldn't even be a conversation. Anybody saying that, you're way beyond the pale. Way beyond the pale.
It could be a conversation.
It shouldn't be. It can't be.
I agree he needs more of a chance. I mean, think of it this way. It's like you're going from Paul Johnson, Georgia Tech, to Jeff Collins, Georgia Tech. You're flushing one system. You're implementing a new system. It's probably not quite that dramatic.
Yeah, who would be the coach who doesn't have a system? Because Berhalter's coming into something with no system.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're going from Etowah High School to Jeff Collins for attacking. Okay. I don't know what system Edwa played. Don't narc me out to Edwa.
Edwa's
massive. This is the first one that came to my head. You know. Anyhow, I do agree he does deserve a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. The thing that just gets me is the there's just way too much from a roster from the second worst team in MLS right now playing for the U.S. Men's National
Team. See, you didn't
team.
Mention the one that I have the bigger issue with, Zach Steffen. Brad Kazan should be the starter in a possession team.
Because he plays for a possession team.
And he's far better in possession than Zach Steffen.
But I don't believe the goalkeeper is the big point of concern.
Go back and look at one goal against Mexico that Zach Steffen just said, here.
Well, yes.
That's my issue.
At Soldier Field. At Soldier Field. Yeah. Yeah. Not in this most recent
sense. No, but that's my issue is he does that far too often.
Well, quite honestly, I mean, and this is nothing against Brad, I think Sean Johnson, quite frankly, could be the number one goalkeeper for the U.S. men's national team right now. I think Brad's better, but I think Sean's younger.
You know, Brad can get you through the next cycle.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Brad can be there in 2022.
He's 34 right now. So, yeah, he'd be 37.
I think he deserves an opportunity to win the job.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be locked down that Steffen is the number one, no questions asked.
Yeah.
I think Johnson, Horvath, who's playing in Europe, Steffen and Kazan should be the ones who are battling it out for that job, and it should be an open competition. I agree with you on Trapp. I just don't think he has the speed. I think he's a very good MLS central midfielder. If you're going to get the most out of Trapp or Bradley or Jackson Yule as a six, and he was okay last night, but he wasn't really pressed in the same way, you got to put Tyler Adams right next to him. And when Adams is healthy, if you do that, then you recreate the Trapp and Artur combination, which is a good one.
Yes.
And was a very good one for Berhalter.
Yes.
Because Artur covered the ground. Trapp was your regista sitting deep and being like a deep-lying playmaker. Okay, you're getting the best out of him. Bradley can do that. I think he does it better than Trapp. I think you could play Jackson Yule or Darlington Nagbe in that role and get the same thing, but you've got to have somebody next to him to do the heavy lifting defensively if you want to play that way.
We're going to talk more about Columbus, by the way, as it pertains to their matchup on Saturday against Atlanta United. Do want to cover some other notes from around MLS and around soccer, things that have come up since last we spoke. You know, we did the whiteboard experiment last Wednesday where we were trying to figure out, okay, is there a way where Atlanta United could win the East and not necessarily need 3 points at Yankee Stadium? And we looked at this stretch for New York City against New England, Toronto tonight, and San Jose on Saturday, all at Yankee Stadium. How many points do they have to drop? And I think we have them going 1-1-1 over that stretch when we did our exercise.
I thought we had 7 points for them in that week.
Did we?
I'm pretty sure we did.
Okay, well, in that case, we're fine.
Okay.
But if you did not see what happened on Saturday.
Oh, boy.
We got a lot Here to talk go. About. So New England gets a very early goal at Yankee Stadium against New York City. They go up 1-0. Moments later, Antonio De La Maya is sent off on a dog so red for a play that happened about, what, 35 yards from goal-ish?
Yeah, maybe 40. And initially he wasn't sent off.
Right. Well, and VAR had a huge, huge role in this match. VAR buzzed down. They went to the monitor. They sent him off. We'll get into that. And then right at the death, another VAR decision. Robert, I think it was
Guido Gonzalez.
Guido Gonzalez, who was the referee. It was the VAR.
Sorry. Petrescu.
Silvio Petrescu was the referee. Did not call a penalty on a hard challenge in the box. Gonzalez does buzz down. I think they got that one
they
right.
They got that one right, in my opinion.
But
the behind-the-ball angle,
right.
I get why the foul wasn't called. I didn't think it was a penalty watching it.
Right.
When they flipped it and had the other angle, it's the back leg that makes contact. It's not the front leg. He takes him out after sliding across.
Yeah, I didn't think it was egregious, but it is a penalty right at the death. And New England playing with 10 men for almost a full 90 minutes in position to win the match, not only doesn't get a point, they don't get anything because they give up the penalty at the end. They lose 2-1. Now, Disco took a look at the De La Maya incident, and they have rescinded the red card, rescinded the fine, rescinded the suspension. You made a good point. Do you know how many teams are affected by this?
Everybody.
Because if De La Maya does not get sent off, New England's probably at the very least, getting a draw out of that match.
We don't know.
If not 3 points.
And we don't know.
And we'll never know.
Yep.
But it goes to a point I made on Soccer Down here this morning. It feels like, as far as the soccer cosmos are concerned, this is starting to feel a little bit like New York City's year, at least in the East, because they're getting all of these breaks. Atlanta United would be in control of their own destiny in the Eastern Conference if that match ended in a draw. Instead, Atlanta United still is reliant on teams like Toronto tonight, San Jose on Saturday, to give them some help. But the De La Maya thing is really, really bothersome. If you're looking at it from a Philadelphia perspective, an Atlanta United perspective, mm-hmm. the teams that still have a shot to get New York City.
Yeah, it's very frustrating because VAR chiming in, and we don't know what the conversation was yet. I'll be fascinated to see if this one shows up on the video this week. But if you decide that's a foul, it has to be a red card. The yellow card and the foul was completely incorrect. And that's a big issue I have with it is...
How does the referee not
know? How do you get that wrong?
Right.
Like, no, you can't do that. It's one or the other. And if you decide to stick with the foul, you have to give the red. So what the independent review committee is telling you when they do this and they take the red away is that the foul was incorrect. It was not a foul. Not a foul at all. And when you look at it, looks like De La Maya wins it and makes a touch to poke it away, and the ball's gone before there's anything else going on in it. There's no foul there. There's no foul. If you call the foul, you have to give a red, but there's no foul. And it's not a ninth minute or fifth minute or whatever minute foul for sure to do that.
Meta, nice job giving us the replay. Way to go. Thank you, Meta. Now, remember, this is Yankee Stadium, so we're saying it's like 35 to 40 yards from goal. It might have actually been like 15 to 20 for all we know at Yankee Stadium.
I think the length is accurate. It's not 70 yards wide, I can tell you that much.
By the way, Meta, if you don't mind, come back to us for a second. So this is our 100th edition of Stoppage Time, and I just want you all to know how far we have come in those 100 episodes, because Jimmy posted a photo today of Jason and Jimmy. This was in our old ninth floor conference room, and we had the old, you know, flat screen TV with a logo on it and scars. I don't even think we had lights.
Nope.
You know, and now
it wasn't that dark.
It was
the picture looked a little borderline.
Knox's camera.
Borderline hostage video.
It was not quality.
I said borderline, not exactly.
It was a dark day after the men's national team.
They did not qualify. You're right. So the lighting match.
Great first.
But we can blame Bruce Arena for this show.
I want you to think of how far we've come. And it's a credit to you two. You started this. I'm still kind of interloping. But, like, we have lights now. Meta's rolling in replays. We have graphics. We have sponsors. We have the whiteboard. We have this thing. Like, it's amazing how far we've come. Meta is a really big reason why. In fact, I think the biggest reason why. Because once we got Meta's production expertise, it's just taken us to the next level. And Meta also gave us the ability to go out on the road and do this too. Mm-hmm. Last year, which I'll never forget, in the lead up to the MLS Cup final, the ability to do Stoppage Time on the road during the playoffs, having Julian Gressel with us the Tuesday after they won MLS mm-hmm. Cup, it's been awesome, and we thank Fido for that. But really, Meta, you're the one who made that possible by setting up a remote rig, and we'd be remiss too if we didn't thank Atlanta United for their cooperation, too, and helping put that all together. Now, all that said, I saw that replay. I'm like, wow. Look at how far we've come, right? Other league notes. Atlanta United is right there as far as being able to clinch a playoff berth. Mm-hmm. They can do it with a win on Saturday. I think that's the only way they can clinch Saturday. They have to win because Montreal is still in play. They can have one more win than Atlanta as it is right now. Orlando is still kind of in play after their draw against LAFC, but all they have to do is drop a point somewhere. Atlanta United's going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. What we're looking at right now is home field in the first round. That looks excellent as well. I think the magic number there is only 5 points.
I think they're top three for sure.
Yeah. It would be very surprising if they weren't. It would take a monumental collapse and a huge surge by someone like Toronto, who has a game in hand.
Toronto is the one who looks the most likely.
Yeah.
Toronto, what's interesting is a couple weeks ago, we're like, are they going to get in?
Yeah.
And now it's flipped to where with DC and the Red Bulls both playing poorly, Toronto could jump them and get into the four spot.
We've got some interesting stuff going on in the West tonight, though, that we want to get into. Because if you look at the Western Conference table right now, there's a real battle for second that's starting to shape up and involving Seattle and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a good team that's going to miss in the West. If you look at it right now, Portland could fall under. LA Galaxy right now is under the line, and they play tonight. I get the feeling there's going to be a team in this group, Dallas, Portland, LA Galaxy, maybe Real Salt Lake. One of those four teams is going to miss, and that's remarkable.
I guess Dallas or the Galaxy. I think Portland's going to be good. I think RSL's good.
Okay.
I think RSL wins tonight.
Yes, and the matches we're talking about tonight, Minnesota's at Houston. RSL is home to the Galaxy?
No, RSL's home to San Jose.
Or San Jose. Galaxy is at Colorado.
Yes.
And that's a tricky one for LA Galaxy.
That's a really tricky one for the Galaxy. The Galaxy are in the tough spot for me. RSL, I think, will be fine. I think they get a win tonight. I think Minnesota wins tonight.
Yeah.
Houston has won two matches since, like, May 25th.
Right. And I don't think they've won at all since Cabrera got sacked.
No.
And more on the notice.
It's been really bad.
Sale rumors involving him.
13 losses, I think, in that time frame.
Right.
I mean, two wins, two draws, and 13 losses is what they've done in their last 17.
Yeah.
That's
not pretty.
No. I don't think they get it done tonight. I think Minnesota does. RSL San Jose is an interesting one. I think RSL gets it done because San Jose is missing some players. However, when you look at who RSL is missing, this is the biggest toss-up game to me.
Well, let's see. Corey Baird would be out because he's with the U.S.
They're missing a bunch of U.S. players and a bunch of U.S. youth players.
Okay.
So that they might be back. Herrera, Bofo Salcedo, Justin Glad. Baird... Probably he came on as a sub. He could feature tonight.
Even St. Louis.
Yeah, I don't think he starts, but he'll feature.
Play. Yeah.
Rusnak, no. And you need him against San Jose's team. No Savarino from Venezuela either. And I think you need him. So if both teams are even strength, I think RSL wins at home. Mm-hmm. Without being at even strength, I still think they can, but it's not going to be easy for them.
RSL.
If they do, they're in a great spot.
RSL's been so good at home
this
year.
That's why I lean that way.
Right.
10-3-1 at home.
And that would be another thing to keep in mind, too, in this battle now to get into the top four. If RSL gets into the top four and, say, Portland ends up fifth or Galaxy ends up fifth. And, again, from an Atlanta United standpoint, we've talked about this a few times. If the Galaxy are going to get in the playoffs, you want them to be fourth or fifth. Okay, MLS... in my opinion, did not completely think through the playoff format where they do not reseed the first-round winners. So the winner of that 4-5 game is going to play the number one seed. It's going to be LAFC. If you are of the opinion, as I am, that LA Galaxy is probably going to match up the best of anyone in the West against LAFC, you want to see Galaxy in that 4-5 spot because there's no guarantee that if LA Galaxy is, say, third or sixth, that they could survive long enough to play LAFC in the conference final.
Portland can win at Bank of California, and RSL did last year. And I think if RSL has to go there, they can handle it.
I still think the Loons are the little team that could in the West. They would need everything to kind of fall into place for them, and LAFC would have to not be completely switched on. But I something about that Minnesota team, I really,
their
really
attack.
Like.
I mean, LAFC defensively in a game like that, they're not the greatest defensively.
Right. And I think, we talked about this morning, I think Saturday, LAFC Philadelphia is going to be a fascinating match.
Yep.
I think Philly is deeper than LAFC. I think LAFC has better top-line players, but Philadelphia is deeper. And you saw LAFC without Vela, a little bit stretched thin with international call-ups and injuries. I mean, really on the ropes in Orlando early. Kind of gritting their way to a draw, but a match that they could have easily lost, and that was to Orlando.
That's the 2 points that might keep Orlando from the playoffs. They needed to close that one out.
Because their schedule's really tough
the
rest of the way. We'll get into more of all this later, and we're going to talk about Atlanta United and Columbus. Let's get to some of your questions, though, brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at tinksimplesteps.com.
Let's see. Sean is asking, can we get Longshore one of those ESPN touchscreens to break down film?
That's the next step.
Cool.
That's stoppage time 3.0. We do have one of those. I just don't know if we can get it on the elevator. Because, we have those Mondo pads, don't we? So we'll try. That's stoppage time
3.0. That's exciting. I like it.
Yeah. I still kind of like the whiteboard for sentimental purposes. And the versatility, too. Like, yes. We can delete the 18-yard box if we need to.
Yes.
I see Rachel asked on Facebook, that NYCFC referee might be the worst I've seen all year.
He really seemed unsure of himself from the opening whistle. And that's the problem I have. If a referee's going to make a call, a poor call, he makes a poor call. It happens. Everybody misses a call. It's just part of the game. He didn't seem like he believed his own calls half the time. And that's what will drive you crazy about a referee. Yeah. When they don't sell it to you, that's frustrating.
It was, who was the ref? Was it Drew Fisher in the Atlanta United New York City match that went to VAR in the middle of a play and kind of meekly did the VAR signal because...
I can't remember who was in the middle, but it was that either, one was really
It was
awkward.
Either Kevin Stott or Drew Fisher. I can't remember.
I think it was Drew.
Maybe it was Drew. And then Stott may have been the ref at LAFC.
Yeah.
Who I get, like, that does drive you nuts. Yeah. When they aren't decisively selling their calls because it leaves the window open for argument one way or the other. We've seen a lot of that this year. Alan Kelly, by the way, is the center referee Saturday night at the Benz. Last time Atlanta United had Alan Kelly, look, I think generously we could call it a controversial finish at Toronto. I think more realistically, he got completely suckered in by Richie Larea diving, which gave Toronto a penalty. And then, you know, he gave a penalty to Atlanta. He didn't really give it. Atlanta earned it.
VAR had to come up with it.
Yeah. Alan Kelly's had an interesting, kind of a tough year. He was referee of the year last year in MLS. He's had a tough year this year because a lot of weird things have found him.
The Seattle situation where he took a goal away because he didn't stop the play with the goalkeeper down, who wasn't injured but got stepped on because he slid underneath a player, took the goal away from Danny Leyva, who had chipped from 40 yards. Poorly handled all the way around. And that was, I think, the week after Toronto.
It was.
It was a run of games where it's like, going on.
He's a good ref.
Yeah.
Sometimes refs can be unlucky, too.
It happens. Like unlucky and just have a bad run of form. I mean, referees are like players. Sometimes you just have a bad series of games.
Let's see. Brett Cash on Facebook says, am I the only one that hopes Orlando can sneak into the playoffs so Atlanta can send them home?
I don't want to see him.
I don't want to see him in the playoffs. No, I don't want that.
Because, and here's why. Like, it's not just a superstition thing. They're going to be getting better. I mean, the more that Pereira assimilates and develops the chemistry with Nani, they've got quality. If you're telling me you can choose between playing Orlando and New England or Chicago in your first playoff game...
Give me Chicago all day.
Absolutely.
I don't want New England either.
New England scares me a little, but I think you could deal with that. Orlando just... I don't know. I think... It's if you're talking about Carlos Heel and some of the players that New England has that are threatening, I think Orlando is a little more threatening in their attack than New England.
I disagree with that. Really? Gustavo Boe and Carlos Heel. Carlos Heel is one of the most underrated players in the league.
I agree with that. But
Mauricio Pereira has been kind of off and on injured. He hasn't really gotten into the mix. They did get Juan back.
Yeah.
For me, it's this. You played Orlando twice this year. What was the score?
1-0.
Both times.
In league match.
Yeah, both times. I mean, it's a narrow margin.
Yeah.
They're a tough defensive team. I don't want to deal with that in a playoff game and watch it go 120 minutes and go to set pieces, go to penalties. I don't want that.
Yeah. And Orlando was a couple pretty bad misses by Dom Dwyer away from, admit Sasha question, from maybe equalizing in one or
it's
both
been
of those matches.
Very
so,
close.
Yeah, I mean, Will Johnson's had a sitter or two. It's tough.
I'll take Chicago. I'll take Montreal. I honestly would take Toronto at the Benz.
Yeah, at the Benz. Yeah.
That's where you'd get them. I'd much rather take that. New England, I don't really want. You'd be playing them back-to-back weeks, too.
With a big break in between.
Yeah.
But yes, you'd play them on
tricky.
The 6th and the 19th. We'll see. We'll see. I would rather not see Orlando, though.
No.
I see Shiva on Facebook says, as much respect I have for NYC and their players and coaches, I want them out of the playoffs early so we don't MLS doesn't have to be embarrassed with having the MLS Cup final at Yankee Stadium.
We talked about that last week, and there are really no alternatives for MLS. I mean, you could go to Rutgers, They have football lines.
Mm-hmm.
Red Bulls aren't going to allow that.
I don't think NYC would go play Red Bull Arena.
You could go to the Yale Bowl, but I think they play on turf, and I think they have football lines.
They used to not. I think
they have football lines now.
Okay.
You really don't have options.
You go to the Rentschler in Hartford?
That's a fool. At that point, you might as well play in Foxborough.
It's the best venue.
No, I agree. That would be devastating for the league. A lot of things would have to happen for it to get to that point. You're going to need LAFC to lose somewhere. You're going to need New York City to get through the East. And quite honestly, I don't think New York City is the clear favorite in the East right now. I think it's 30% New York, 30% Philly, 30% Atlanta. I think that's where we are in the Eastern Conference right now.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a clear favorite.
I would edge Atlanta a little bit because I think they have the better roster. But, yeah, I mean, Philly won at home. Atlanta beat NYC at home.
Yeah.
The home team is winning these matches between these three.
And you don't play legs anymore.
Nope.
So if you've got to go on the road to New York City or Philadelphia,
it's going
to
be tough. It's doable, but it's going to be tough.
Okay, we'll take more of your questions later. Thank you. Keep typing them in on the bottom of your screen. Stoppage Time is brought to you by Aaron's Easy Beautiful, affordable top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best. That's fine. Get started at Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. Atlanta United. I don't even know if they trained last week.
Yeah, towards the end of the week they did.
Okay.
Because Franco Escobar debuted as a new blonde hairstyle.
Yeah, I saw that. Interesting. they did train today.
Yeah.
It sounds like Barco did not train again. I'm guessing Barco's not going to be available on Saturday. The way things are trending right now, we haven't been told officially.
And we don't know if he trained last week. That's the thing, is we don't know where it stands. He could have been inside today.
Absolutely.
Frank DeBoer speaks to the media tomorrow, and we'll know.
The team did put out a video of yesterday's training, and I was looking pretty carefully for Barco. Did not see him. That doesn't mean he wasn't there.
Yeah.
That absolutely does not mean anything. Let's assume, though, for a moment, maybe he does not play on Saturday. The rest of the international call-ups, who should be okay. Miles Robinson, Brad Guzan, probably back in Atlanta today. I'd be surprised if they weren't. Justin Merrim is doing an appearance Friday up in Paulding County, so we know he's back. They played Uzbekistan, I think, on Monday in Saudi Arabia.
They played a qualifier first, and they played a friendly.
They played Bahrain in a qualifier, and then we're talking about Iraq's national team. Bello is coming back from Holland.
Yep.
The U-17s played a tournament there.
They played yesterday. Was it yesterday?
They played yesterday. Okay. So it'd be a stretch to think that Bella would be in the mix right now anyway.
I think one thing when we talk about the international duty, sometimes we're on the very conservative side about if guys would be available.
That's true.
I think at this stage, if they're back today and they train Thursday and they train Friday,
yeah, you've got time.
They can play.
Yeah, you've got time.
Depending on who it is, they can play. I think Bello can be in the mix, but the question is Merrim, how's he feeling?
Yeah.
How's Bello feeling? What do you want to do on the left side?
Well, and let's get into that, because Columbus, one thing they do, they can overload the right side, and we'll get into that on the whiteboard. Now, keep in mind, even if Merrim is available but not starting, you do have Deion Pereira. Keep in mind, if Bello is even unavailable, you still feel like you can get by with Florentin Pogba as a left center back.
If you stay in the
3-5-2. So it's not like Atlanta United would be screwed if those two are unavailable.
Not at all.
But let's talk about how this matchup could play, especially going down the right side. Columbus is right, Atlanta's left.
Yeah, let's use red for Atlanta this time. So we'll talk about the defensive side with three center backs, three central midfielders, kind of staggered. Your two up top, and your wingbacks. All right. So, here's the thing. What Columbus likes to do is they play in a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3. They're going to have Jossie Zardes. They're going to have Pedro Santos. They're going to have their two wingers, and they've had different pieces in here. They've got their two central midfielders. It's usually Trapp and Artur. And they've got their back four. What they do a lot, because of Harrison Offal right here, is he goes forward. He becomes an extra winger. All right, so your response to that, you've got to be a little more conservative defensively on the left side. You got to deal with that. So if it's Justin Merrim, that's a little out of his comfort zone. He's done a good job doing it. But it's not his strong suit. If it's George Bello, it's a little bit more of a strong suit, but he hasn't played for the first team since the match in Costa Rica. So is he ready for that opportunity? I think coming off of U17 duty, maybe he is. We'll have to see. But you're going to have to deal with that. And the other tricky element of it is Pedro Santos. Because Pedro Santos is playing as the 10, replacing Federico Higuain, who's out due to injury. But he naturally wants to play out wide. So if you create an opportunity where you have an overload with Santos roaming over here, that's where, if you're Columbus and you're intelligent about it, you can get Atlanta very stretched and create opportunities for Artur or Trapp to get forward and make things happen. Because if Santos overlaps or drifts out here, awful overlaps, you've got your winger in play as well. And Jossie Zardes is going to be your focal point here. You can draw the attention and swing it and come over to the left side. That's what I worry about with Columbus. Santos has been their best player this season, and he's been a lot better playing centrally than he was out wide last year. But awful is the dangerous one to me. And he was, and if you go back to March, he was the player who broke his jaw in that game. Nothing to do with the conditions. It just, it's kind of an unlucky thing where I think it was a shot or a clearance that caught him in the jaw.
Yes.
It was a weird situation.
You're right.
And he checked out, and he's been back in the team being very effective for them. He's best suited as an attacking player. He plays right back, and when he goes, what Columbus has to be careful about is, all right, this is the flip side of it. He goes, you get Santos drifting over a little bit, that's fine. You turn it over. Then you're in trouble if you are Columbus. Then you have to slide. And then there's opportunities on the backside. And remember, Atlanta wants to play very wide with their wingbacks. They want to stretch the field. It's an interesting conundrum because if you can use that to your advantage and then turn them, you're going to have a ton of success down that side.
Now, one thing that's interesting is where Atlanta has really gotten comfortable and has hurt a lot of teams, especially since the June international break, the long diagonals from LGP. Mm-hmm. However, LGP is out for this match because he got a yellow card in the last league game in Philadelphia. Does that affect that element of Atlanta United if it is, say, Mikey Ambrose at right wing back or Michael Parker? Not wing back, excuse me, right center back.
Well, right center back, in your perfect situation, I think the back three that you want in a game that matters if everybody's healthy is Escobar, Robinson, LGP. You want him on the left.
Right.
He's played on the right some, and he can hit that one.
Right.
But if he's here, he can hit this one. Pablo will be here, I would think.
I'd be shocked if he wasn't.
He's got that ball more than Escobar would here, but Escobar's got it a little bit. Pogba, that's all day. So that's the other thing. And this is, I think, something we talk about a lot. We talked about it with the U.S. We talk about it with Atlanta United. You're not going to do the same thing over and over again all day long. You know what? I mean, if you're playing in this and Columbus is going to attack this way, you turn him over, Offal gets forward, you're going to turn them over, and sometimes you're going to run. Sometimes you're going to take that opportunity in space. Sometimes Joseph is going to drift over here and look for the ball. Sometimes you're going to use that as the decoy, and you're going to hit the big ball this way. So you get them leaning one way, you go the other. Mm-hmm. You need to have options, and you need to know how a team can hurt you, and Columbus can definitely hurt you down the right, but how can you hurt them and turn that around on them? You can attack behind Harrison Offal, get things stretched, but you can also use that as a decoy from time to time and come down the other side and play Julian Gressel, because then let's play this out for a second. So you've attacked this way sometimes. They're already leaning. They're already worried about it. Let's pull him back over here. That's your center back. They're already worried about it, so they're creeping that way. So instead of hitting this, you play back to Pogba. He goes boom to Gressel.
Yeah.
Then what happens? Then they're already sliding this way. Now they're sliding back this way, and you create gaps. You're not going to be able to slide back and forth that way. Pitti through a gap. Joseph through a gap. You create openings by that side-to-side. That's why the side-to-side play that everybody gets worked up about sometimes is critical. Because it opens the game up.
Side-to-side play.
Side-to-side. Possession. Possession.
Expansion.
Ah!
While we're at it, before you sit down, can you give us just a blank 3-5-2 for Atlanta for a moment? Let's go through some of the lineup possibilities here, because you're not going to have LGP. We're thinking maybe not Barca. We don't know that for sure.
Let's send Columbus to the match.
Yeah, Columbus is going back to MAPFRE Stadium.
All right.
So let's give us a 3-5-2 here, and let's kind of workshop the Atlanta lineup a little bit. Okay, so you're three in the back. We're thinking Pogba, Miles, and Franco, right?
That's what I think.
From left to right.
Escobar, Robinson, Pogba.
So your right wing back would be Julian.
Yep.
Okay.
Easy.
Left wing back, is it an either or Pereira or Miram in your opinion?
I don't rule Bello out. I lean against it because we haven't seen him, but it's definitely possible.
I would like to see Bello off the bench. Like, have him play 20 minutes with the first team before you commit to starting.
Here's the thing for Bello. I'm not so much worried about that because he's been around the first team for 2 years now.
Right.
But I think Bello, I think what Bello's 2019 is geared towards now is the U17 World Cup. Mm-hmm. At the end of October and into November, which is at the end of your playoff run, you're not thinking about him there. So your question is, do I need to give Deion Pereira this game? Because I might need him in a critical moment, and I want him to deal with Harrison Offal and get experience from that and be effective for us. Mm-hmm. Or do I feel like George Bello is the better option, even though I might not have him later. I've got to have him here, and this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. That's your question. If you don't play Merrim, who could absolutely just be the guy?
Right. Now, your midfield. If Barco is out,
okay,
is Larenowitz your 6, Nagby your 8, Heinemann your 10, or are you thinking, we've seen Nagby as a 10 at times this year. Salt Lake, no. I think, was the most
I wouldn't go back to that. I think he's
I don't think it worked.
No.
Okay. So, Nagby, your 8. Is Larenowitz your 6?
Depends on what you do with Larenowitz, Nagby, Rometty.
Rometty would be the other, yeah.
Because
Rometty could be your 6.
Because you could do what we've seen a bunch with Rometty or Nagby, the other one, Heinemann. Heinemann's going to push forward a little bit more. So when it's Barco and Pitti, it plays more like this. It plays a little more like a box. 2 sitting, 2 attack. It turns into a little bit more of a 3-4-3. When it's Heinemann instead of Barco, it's a little more, honestly, it's a little more like 1 behind 2 that are just a little advanced and more of a true 2 forwards, but Pitti's going to drop in a little bit. It does change the character of it a little bit. I prefer, and just from what we've seen, I like Jeff in any of these situations as a 6 who's going to stay because he's going to be more connected here. That frees Nagby Rometty, Nagby Heinemann, Rometty Heinemann, whichever duo you want in a situation to go. If it's Barco and it becomes more like this, it's not quite as rigid as this, where it is one in front of the other with Larenowitz sitting. Mm-hmm. But it gets a little slanted because wherever Jeff is, he's going to lean this way. And if it's Nagby, he's going to go this way. So it becomes a little more of a rotation. But Jeff is the more comfortable one just sitting and here and playing with this group and protecting them. Rometty, Nagby, who have both played in that role too, they're going to want to go and go hunting a little bit. And that's where you can create some gaps. If both go and both go, there can be a hole here. And somebody's got to step into it. Then things get out of whack.
Right. No temptation to play Escobar as your right wing back and move Gressel up to maybe the number 10.
You could. we haven't seen it in a while with this group.
I'm trying to remember the last time we've seen Gressel as a 10 at all.
Well, even centrally, you're going back to really the postseason last year.
Yeah.
Where it was much more like 1, and then honestly, it was like it was very deep.
But let me be clear. Like, none of us are worried about Heinemann as a 10. That's not why I'm throwing that out there. I'm just throwing out possibilities, kind of mixing and matching.
I think the way that it plays with this group, I don't know if I'd necessarily even call it a 10. It's more of, with Jeff, you have a 6. With Rometty, Nagby, Heinemann, it's almost 3-8s.
Right.
Which we've talked about it, and it's been something that I've been worried about at times. It turns a little more like this, flat. And if they all go, gap. If one of them sits and they're in sync, okay, it can work, and it can rotate. But if all of them go, and they're all wanting to go, the spacing isn't right. That's why I like Jeff in the mix here, and it gives you the opportunity. But I think the team has looked its best with Jeff, with either Nagby or Rometty, and with Barco and Pitti in front playing behind Joseph.
I agree.
I think that's how the team has looked its best this season.
I agree.
And that's risky in a lot of ways because you're leaving a lot on your six. You're going to have a lot of 1v1 opportunities with your back line. You're trusting Miles in a big way to clean everything up. You're trusting Gressel and Merrim to defend in space 1v1 a lot. You're trusting your players in a lot of situations. They have to get decisions right. The safer way is more of a true 3-5-2, where they're deeper, which is what we saw in the postseason last year, where it was Nagby and Gressel, or Nagby and Rometty, or Gressel and Rometty with a six, where it was more like, okay, we're going to sit even deeper here. It was Miguel filling this space, dropping in, and Joseph up here by himself, and you're looking for your opportunities to get forward.
Yeah. And again, just to be super clear, thank you, Jason, just to be super clear on the Barco situation, we don't know. We really don't even know much about the injury, other than it's a leg injury. We were told in Philadelphia that they weren't sure about how long he would be out. I didn't get the impression that it was anything they were really super concerned about. But we don't know. We'll find out more from Frank DeBoer tomorrow. Don't be surprised, I think is what we're saying, if Barco is not playing on Saturday. And I only say that because reportedly he did not train today. And I'm really trusting Ryan and Mikey and Kat and everyone on the digital team to give us the full picture with what they're tweeting out. Because in the videos of training yesterday, I saw a silver-haired Franco Escobar, but I did not see an Ezekiel Barco. I don't know. The jury is very much out on Franco doing the silver hair.
We'll see. I like the hair. Good job, Franco.
We'll see.
Rometty got a new tattoo as well.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Yep.
Is it like a mom tattoo?
No, I think it's on the spider web on his calf. Elbow. I think it's below the knee.
Oh, did he get a lion? Like a matching thing?
It looked large. I didn't get a good look at what it was, but it was big.
Well, hey, I mean, when I have a day off, I go to Hilton Head. You know, some people get inked up.
Sure. It's all good.
All good. All good. We'll see it all on Saturday, I guess. And what very much looking forward to getting back on the air Saturday with a voice now. That'll be nice, too. 6:30 will be the Five Stripes Countdown on Saturday. I don't know if we're on Sirius XM or not on Saturday. We were talking about being on. I'd be very surprised if they took us over Philadelphia LAFC, but we were talking about it, so we will find out. Let's get back to your questions. Of course, you're going to listen on 92.9 The Game anyway, right?
Or
radio.com, absolutely. Let's get back to your questions. Brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TakeSimpleSteps.com.
On Facebook, Josh asks, which player is going to step up big these last six matches?
I think Hyndman, for the reason that we just talked about, his versatility. You know, he could play right wing back if you need him. He could play central attacking midfielder if you need him to. He could be a second striker if you needed him to. I think just from the standpoint of versatility, and also, let's be respectful of the match compression coming up here for Atlanta United. I don't want to downplay Wednesday, Sunday. That's tough. Mm-hmm. And you got travel in there, too. Not long trips, but travel. You're going to need to rotate a wee bit. And I think Hyndman's going to be a big, big part of that.
Franco Escobar. And not because of the hair. I think it's because he hasn't played great lately. He's been a little shaky. And he's going to be critical in the back, and I think he's going to be critical potentially giving Julian some rest on the right wing back side.
I would also add LGP. Got to be really, really careful when he comes back for the Cincinnati match, because now every other yellow will get him a suspension. He's on an incredibly thin rope the rest of the way.
Yeah.
I think Pitti's going to step it up in overdrive these last six matches.
He's been outstanding lately.
I'd like to see the next year if there is one.
I think the goals are going to start adding up. Yeah.
That'd be fun to see.
And I think Tito for a couple games, super sub.
Got to give him a chance. But I think, again, that to your point, Jimmy, match compression.
Yeah.
You know, if he's 90 minutes fit, start him in Cincinnati. What do you have to lose? You know, if he's 90 minutes fit.
Could be.
Let's see. Robin on Facebook said, on the whole, which conference do you feel is stronger at this stage of the season heading into the playoffs?
West, I think.
On the whole, the West. I think the East is a little more compressed and probably a little more competitive from top to next to the bottom, We're going to leave Cincinnati out of that group. But the West, beyond LAFC, when you get to 2 through 8, and with Colorado jumping up and being a team that can bite you a little bit, I'll put them in that.
I look at it the same way that I evaluate the overall strength of a college football conference, okay? If the number 3 team in the SEC plays the number 3 team in the ACC, who's going to win that game?
Well, who's the 3 team in the East?
I'm glad you asked, because the number 3 team in the East right now is Atlanta United. Uh-huh. The number 3 team in the West is Minnesota, who they've beaten twice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, number 2 in the East right now is Philadelphia. Number 2 in the West is Seattle. On a neutral field, I think Philadelphia probably, neutral field, beat Seattle. D.C. against San Jose, I think that's a toss-up.
It's a toss-up. Right now, I'd take San Jose.
Red Bulls, Real Salt Lake. Again, toss-up, maybe slight edge Red Bulls. That's tough, though.
I don't know about that.
That's really tough. Toronto, Portland. I give that to Portland.
I go Portland.
But then, New England, Dallas. Toss-up, I think, right now. Yeah,
you know, you don't like the Revs, do you?
I don't trust
them. You don't trust the Revs. You don't trust Bruce Arena, do you?
Montreal Galaxy, I would go Galaxy. But then Orlando Sporting. I know Sporting's
playing healthy. I'm
better,
Sporting.
But look at body of work this year. I'd say Orlando.
This season, I'd go Orlando.
Right. Chicago, Colorado.
Colorado right now.
Right now. Columbus, Houston, I give that to Columbus. And then Cincinnati, Vancouver. But
nobody wants that game. No. The Couch Ultras would be very happy in Vancouver, though. If you're not following the Couch Ultras on Twitter, they are the greatest.
Yeah.
They have a room like this.
Yeah.
They do TIFOs in their basement behind the couch.
Yeah.
Like, it's rigged up. They have pulleys. It's unbelievable.
I think the point we're getting at here,
the greatest
though,
fan group in the league outside of Atlanta is the Couch Ultras in Vancouver.
I think what we're saying is the East playoff group is better than the West playoff group right now. West has the best team, but the best playoff group is in the East. That's a really good question, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a flip from last year, by the way. That's a total flip from last year where the two best teams were in the East. Maybe the better overall group was in the West. Yeah. I think it's a total flip this year.
Christopher on Facebook says, this Saturday will be my first ever Atlanta United match at the Benz.
Really?
Any chance of running into you guys ahead of Saturday's match?
Is this Trombone Steve? Or,
no, this is a different one. This is Christopher.
Wow, we
Christopher.
Have all these people. Send us a DM.
It's possible. It's tough. Pregame gets really weird once the doors open and we're running around doing stuff. Well, it's possible.
On the Gulch. Maybe
in the Gulch, yeah. Here? Yeah, no, you can come down and see us at the Gulch with the Faction tailgate, but we'll be there at like 3:30.
Have a great time. Is it Chris or Christopher?
Christopher.
Christopher. Here. Christopher Gersel's never been to an Atlanta United game?
So yeah, coming in from out of town.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah, is he coming in from South Carolina?
Okay,
you got to pat. I mean, Christopher, man, that surprised me. Have a great, great time. Is it full capacity?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, have a great time. If I were to give advice, I would say, you know, do the Gulch, obviously. Try to get in the March if you can.
Yeah.
And then
sign the Golden Spike.
If you can.
Do all that. Get in early.
Be in there early and don't take any shortcuts, you know. Yeah. Don't try to get to your seat like 2 minutes before kickoff and you know, go out to the restroom 1 minute before halftime to beat the line. Like, don't take shortcuts. Like, you know, pace yourself with your liquid consumption.
Right? Always pace yourself.
You know, liquids. I think you're gonna have a great time. And send us a DM, and we'll try to figure out a way. I would like to meet you, Christopher. You've been a great supporter of ours, so we appreciate that.
Sean had a question here, but people are answering. But I'll twist this question. Anybody else on yellow card accumulation?
Mo Adams.
This is Jeff? Or am I wrong in that? I thought Jeff was at least in the ballpark.
I don't think so. Okay. It's Mo Adams. The only other one I'm thinking about is Franco.
Yeah, he'd be close because he's been there
Franco
before.
Did Franco get a yellow in Philly? I don't think he did. So I think it's only Mo Adams right now. Don't quote me on that. We'll get the link print out.
Jeff and Franco might be two away. I think Franco's definitely two away.
Yeah.
For some reason, I keep thinking Jeff is, but he might have.
Jeff might be two away, but I don't think he's one away.
No, I don't think he's one away.
And remember, that will reset for the playoffs.
Yeah.
So you just got to get through the rest of it. Even for Leandro, it's going to reset going into the playoffs. I really am uncomfortable with the position that Leandro is in right now, where two more yellows gets him another suspension. He just
get to Yankee Stadium.
Get through that, and
if you pick one up there and you're suspended, the next one I can deal. But yeah, get to Yankee Stadium.
I agree. We need him there.
See, Sean asks, is this Messi to enter Miami a pipe dream?
Totally.
Or something that could actually happen?
Thank you, Sean. Totally forgot to bring that up earlier.
It could happen. It could. I don't think it's crazy talk. It could
happen. So what needs to happen for it to happen?
They're not going to buy him out because that would cost like $777 million. Yeah, something obscene. So that's not going to happen. So they can get him in the summer.
How do you convince Lionel Messi to come to Miami on a free?
We're going to give you a stupid contract. You're going to be able to make stupid endorsement money. You're going to get to live in Miami. It's going to be easier for you to play for Argentina because you're going to be closer. You know, Lionel, you want to have an opportunity to win a World Cup. You know that's what you're dying for. We're going to make it easier for you to come here and play. You will be Beckham, and David Beckham can talk about being David Beckham. You will be Beckham and Pelé rolled into one in this league. And whatever it takes to get him to sign on to that, if it is a cut of ticket sales, whatever, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It is.
A future franchise.
The league won't give that up. And maybe Miami has to find a slice of the franchise to give him.
So,
and it might not be a bad deal idea to do it.
It might not be a bad deal.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. We talked about this on Soccer Down here today, and I'm with you. I think the hook is the national team.
Yeah.
Like, Lionel, okay, you don't have to fly from Spain to Argentina now. You fly from Miami to Argentina. You're in the same time zone. It's a lot easier. That, to me, has got to be the hook. And I agree that it can happen. Now, here's the other side of that. Let's say you're in the room with Lionel Messi and his agent. Mm-hmm. Okay, Lionel, so here's the thing. Yeah, you're going to have some road games in Vancouver and Seattle and Portland. And, you know, American Airlines has a hub in Miami, but you're going to be sitting in 20E.
One, he's never sitting in 20E. He's always first class, at least. At least you
can
know.
Can you do that though?
They'll find a way. That's an easy.
Oh,
one.
That's what Chris on Facebook said. He said, "Are you gonna fly coach to
Seattle?"
That's a legit question.
I think some players have it in their contract that they don't fly coach.
Really?
Yeah. I think I'm not. Don't quote me.
Okay. Even if he's flying in first class,
I think he would. He's at least getting comfort plus.
No. I mean, look. Let's go with the theory.
I think he's first class.
Let's go with the theory that he's sitting in first and he's getting a cold soba noodle salad with, you know, orange glazed chicken and the wonderful food they give you on United. And their food is really good. Again, he doesn't have that element of travel except really for Champions League. And even in Champions League, it's not always that extreme. Yeah, you'll get a little bit of that.
You get the trip to Moscow.
But Miami is on a geographical island in MLS where their shortest road trip to Orlando is still a one-hour flight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're flying to Philadelphia and Boston, you're talking about 2-3 hour flights. This is an issue that Wayne Rooney really had trouble with, if you believe the articles that the tabloids are publishing in England right now, that Wayne Rooney, one of the reasons why he's leaving MLS and going to Derby County is because he can't stand the travel in MLS.
I think there's other reasons, too.
Nothing proven. My point is this. If this is the final push it takes to get full-time charters in MLS, then you've got to do it. Because if you bring in Lionel Messi to Major League Soccer, everything changes for this league. Everything changes.
I think you pass the rule, and the CBA will be done by the time that he's available. Now, there could be conversations, sure, but that'll be done, and that should be a talking point for sure. I think if it's a three-hour-plus flight, you can charter, no questions asked. We're not keeping track of them.
But I think you also have – there are other issues, too. You got to fix the schedule.
Of course. There's a lot of stuff like that. But the flight thing, I think, is the least of the concerns.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, I mean, Messi has a lot of gas left in the tank, in my opinion. And if you bring him into the league, you know, he reminds me a little bit of where Chris Paul is right now in the NBA. He is not at his extreme prime anymore, but he's still an extremely good player.
I think he's still way above that.
Okay.
I really do.
So that's even more optimistic. Yeah. You bring in a player of his caliber, Suddenly now, MLS becomes must-watch television in Europe.
Yeah.
If it's not already in South America, it certainly becomes. Yeah. And by the way, if you're trying to close the gap between yourself and Liga MX, hey, Cruz Azul, Club America, Toluca, we got Messi. Who do you have?
Like if they,
have some good players, too.
That's always I say harp on with the stadiums being small, like for like Miami. Like if they got Messi, how big of a stadium could they fill every game for that? And if he starts
that's
small,
a great point.
Like, why do you cap yourself on that? Like, making it a mega big deal. Like, if I mean, just saying if Messi was playing at the Benz, I mean, goodness gracious, you could open up 70,000 every game.
Well, that's a very interesting point. Does this maybe help Miami get out of the Lockhart thing and give them an argument that, hey, as long as Messi's here, we're going to play at Hard Rock?
They won't play at Hard Rock, though.
Really?
The guy who owns the Dolphins is suing U.S. Soccer.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
That's a great point. Like you're kind of limiting yourself a little bit if you're going to play in a 20,000-seat stadium with Lionel Messi. That's a great point.
Why do that?
I don't know.
I know there's
like the aspiration, and I like the fact that it's aspirational from a soccer standpoint, not just a marketing standpoint.
It's aspirational on all standpoints. Yeah. That's what's special about it. I think what happens is Lionel Messi plays at Barcelona as long as he wants to play at Barcelona. If they win another Champions League, I think he might be interested in leaving. Mm-hmm. La Liga titles and all that, he's done them every time. It's not even as big of a deal anymore. So if he wins another Champions League, I think he's gone. I do think he ends his career in Argentina at Newell's Old Boys. Mm-hmm. He never had the chance to play for them. That was his club as a child. That's where he started. He went to Barcelona to continue the hormone treatments to be able to get to a normal size. It's important to him, I think, as somebody who has not always felt Argentinian and been treated as a true Argentine, to have that experience of playing in Argentina. So I think he ends there.
Yeah.
But I think he could come here for a year or two in between and be a pretty big important
legend part. Legend has it he was a Newell's ball boy when Tata was playing for Newell's. Legend has it.
Yeah, reportedly. he was there around the time, if I'm not mistaken, I'd have to go back and check ages, when Diego Maradona played. And that's the thing is, Messi's dad was a huge Diego Maradona fan, a huge Tata Martino fan. It all overlaps. Mm-hmm. And the Argentine League has a lot of older players who come in and play and are there for the atmosphere, the experience, as much as anything. I think he finishes his last season at Newell's.
I think it's really exciting. I mean, we've heard theories that this could happen one day. It would be enormous for the league, especially if it happens this soon. I never thought it would happen potentially this soon. Amazing to think about. Very, very exciting for the league. Okay. Out of time. Thank you for your questions. Next 2 weeks, we're going to be on Tuesday. So next Tuesday, 2 o'clock, because Jason and I will be in Cincinnati on Wednesday. The following week, also 2 o'clock, it'll be Jason and Jimmy. I'll be at the league meetings, the NBA league meetings in New York. Thank you very much for joining us for Stoppage Time, brought to you by Aaron's Easy, Beautiful, Affordable, Top Brands in Furniture, Electronics, and Appliances. Your credit isn't the best? That's fine. Shop Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. 6:30, Saturday night. Jason and I will see you on the radio. For Jimmy and Jason, I'm Mike. Thanks for joining us for the 100th edition of Stoppage Time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.